Today, we're going to delve a little bit into mindset and the feeling of recrimination that comes with weight gain and how it might make you want to isolate from others and why you shouldn't. So we're going to hit that music and we're going to get started. Throughout the podcast, I've been talking about one specific person who eternally I am chasing to put my fist in his face. I even managed it twice recently. Joining me today is my workout body. Damn it!
Yeah. Well, your workout body is joining you today and every day.
It is. It really is.
And your workout buddy is here.
And my workout buddy is here. So I'm going to leave this in because this is terrible. Scott!
Hi, everybody.
How are you doing?
I'm great. You know, honestly, I'm a little bit sore from our workout yesterday.
I am too. The midsection, weaving under the rope thing, truly, truly sucks. I absolutely hate it with all of my being, so I love it.
We love that dichotomy, don't we? The love-hate relationship.
Yeah, this is going to be terrible. I don't want to do this. I can't wait to do this. It's going to suck so badly. Awesome. This is great. It's a weird mind state.
Yeah, and I think we do a good job about joking about it. One of the things that we started doing early on in our workouts was substituting the word failure with success.
So much success.
And every time you would struggle on an exercise and not be able to get the weight up or do the rep, what everyone would call failure, we would call success.
Well, growth comes from not getting that last rep. So it is success.
It's a joke, but it's real.
Very real.
Yeah.
Scott is my workout buddy. He is pretty much my pace car. He is who I'm chasing. He's very fit. He's very strong. So it's very painful to do this. Our relationship is almost exclusively self-torture. We met at the gym. And just somehow we bonded over, what the hell did we bond over? How did this happen between us? Because I remember your appearance. My perception of meeting you was, I'm there at Eric's gym and I'm working out. And suddenly there's this quiet guy in the corner jumping rope or working the speed bag or lifting. From my perspective, I never saw you talk to anybody. And I just noticed you for like a week or two. And then finally, one day while I was in the ring rolling around and you were jumping rope, I just essentially verbally assaulted you to figure out who you were because you just were this guy that was there. Now, I don't know what your perception of that
was. It's entirely the same. I'm a quiet person, at least initially. When I go into a new place, I'm very much the person to stand back in the corner, feel it out, understand the dynamics between people, listen, react. So I was being that guy.
And I just blew it for you, didn't I?
No, but I needed that. I always look for the people who are much more outgoing and outspoken like you are. And you did the Bruce thing, which I know your listeners know about. Which is, you just called it verbally assaulted me, but you did it in such a disarming and funny way. You're just an engaging person. And I think the fact also that we both like being in the boxing area of the gym, which is a really underpopulated area of the gym. I gravitated towards that because I like to box and you like to be in there and, you know, do whatever it was you were doing in the ring that day.
Attempted self-harm.
Yeah, rolling around. But anyway, just the fact that there was the both of us in there, most of the people are in the gym, and that's where I kind of started out doing my thing. And yeah, you came up, you started talking with me, joking around with me, and then I started to open up in the gym, started to give it back a little bit. I think we started talking about music pretty early on. I told you I'm a musician, you started listening to some of my music, and that kind of peeled another layer of the onion back, and then I don't know. Eventually, we started working out together, and now here we are.
How did that start? I'm trying to remember, because at some point, it went like from 0 to 60 really fast.
So your trainer, Miles, I think in the gym, especially in the boxing part of your workouts, you like to just make random...
They're not random.
You like to include everyone around you in what you're doing.
What do you mean means is that I scream.
Yeah.
That I get through my stuff by verbalizing. And since I'm a bit of a character, I appreciate when other people laugh.
And other people do laugh. Other people do laugh, myself included. And I think in doing so, you kind of opened up the door to your struggle and allowed me to come in, and you shared your story with me. And then I felt invested in you and started to offer my encouragement to your workouts. And Miles, your trainer, credit to him, was very inclusive in the way that he managed your fitness. You know, a lot of trainers, I think, can be very territorial about that.
He would share me around. Yeah, he would definitely share
me
around.
Yeah, so I think he actually enjoyed it when I would sort of chime in and maybe even step into your workouts and offer some I don't know about help, but encouragement at least, and or just sort of the shared experience of fitness, which is a huge part of our relationship and many relationships, is the shared aspect of what fitness allows for people.
Well, we've said before on this podcast, other guests, where the idea being, if you're having difficulty getting started, finding a buddy helps give you motivation. One, you've got somebody that you're being accountable to. It's 9 a.m. It's Saturday. I want to be in bed. Scott's waiting for me. I got to get there. It also helps, certainly our relationship. Neither of us like downtime too much. We don't sit around and chat.
Oh, you mean in the gym?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We very much work as pacing for each other. First off, we do have a bit of a commonality. We both come out of CrossFit. So that gives us a sort of common knowledge and sort of a base to build from, even though I can't say that I'm nearly as fond of CrossFit as you are in my memories. But it does give a common base of the degree of how to break down work, how to pace workouts.
I think that's the biggest benefit from CrossFit is how to take a insurmountable number of reps.
Chunk it
and start to build little checkpoints for yourself mentally and get through something big. That's my biggest takeaway from CrossFit. At the gym we work out at, people don't like CrossFit, or at least they don't practice it. It's much more weightlifting based.
It's very looked down upon.
Yeah.
So the gym we go to, for the listener, hi. The gym we go to is very much geared towards getting actors, musicians into shape. We're a little bit of outliers in as much as, while we want that, our workout goals tend to be a lot more intense. And there's only a couple people, like Vinny is somebody who comes to mind, Vinny Dean, who really works out with an intensity you could melt steel with.
I've heard it described as show muscles versus go muscles.
And we fall a little closer to the go muscles than show muscles. I mean, certainly with my physique, clearly I'm looking to go, not show too much.
I always found it interesting that people were at this gym, and it's not the first experience I've had with this, but more weightlifting based gyms, people leave a workout and they're not drenched in sweat. And I always found that interesting because for me, my gauge of whether or not I've worked hard, for better or for worse, and Eric, the head trainer, an extremely accomplished, generous spirit.
Great guy. Absolutely great guy.
And amazing hospitality, the way that he creates this spirit of inclusivity at the gym. Anyway, he doesn't support that notion that you need to be drenched in sweat in order to get a good workout, which was a foreign concept to me. I don't know. You met me at the point when I was wrestling with that. I was coming into the gym and I was wanting to get a really good cardio workout. I was wanting to do burpees and jump rope and work heavy bag and leave drenched, dripping sweat. Eric came up to me at the beginning of my time there, around when we met. And he says, you know what you're doing? I was doing thrusters and pull-ups and burpees and things. And he said, you realize that what you're doing in here is different from what everyone else is doing in here, right? And I said, yeah, I do see that. And he asked me, what are your goals? I said, I don't know. I'm just trying to be a fit person. He said, you're a musician, right? I said, yeah. He says, do you want to look good on stage and have a certain physique? And, you know, just based on how I look, you know, he kind of brought Adam Levine up and the way that he looks. And
I can see that.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, at that point it was, I think it was 2019, so they had just done the Super Bowl, Maroon 5, and he took his shirt off and it was like kind of a big thing. I do want to look good like that. And so for a year he kind of altered the way I saw it, and I was leaving workouts not drenched in sweat. I was changing the way that I did it, and I found that to be somewhat satisfying, but even if it didn't show up on my figure, I would still, you know, and Eric would kind of not be that happy with this, but I would still want to get into that boxing room, and I would still want to jump rope, and I would still want to lunge around the block, and I would still want to do all those things that just maybe don't show up on my physique, but just made me feel better and made me feel more accomplished. And I think that's actually one of the things that we really bonded over, because you were always down to join me on those non-aesthetic aspects of the workout that just really are about going to that dark place mentally and just getting that grind on.
As I said, it was a very quick acceleration where you would sit in, you'd kind of connect into the workout. And I think a real intersection point for us was the boxing, because I'd see you boxing, you'd be there with various different people, usually your dancer, lately come baker buddy Max, great guy. And you would be boxing, you'd be like, I really want to do that. I don't have any clue. And from there, we just suddenly, it became like a several time a week thing. One, I just find it so much fun. It's a similar mindset, and you are really fit. So it's a massive chase for me, and I'll never catch up to you. And I'm okay with that. I don't care about catching up to you, because you would, like, one, I don't want to, because it would require a car accident on your part to give me the space to bridge that gap. And I don't want that. But even in trying to keep pace with you, I am just passing worlds of different things. So it doesn't matter if I never catch up to you. It's the same way I viewed Vinny. When Vinny would be in the gym, you know, if he had a thing he had to do, Vinny would come in, work out as hard as he could for as much time as he did, and would run out at the very last minute. But if Vinny had nothing that morning, Vinny just would get involved with whatever class was there. He would just go from thing he was doing to thing he was doing.
Yeah.
I always admired that, because I think part of it was, as a kid, I had asthma. I was really overweight. I was protected a little more than I should have been. So I didn't ever have that physical effort. And I always felt like a wimp because of it. So as I'm chasing people like you and Vinny, I just admire that, because I didn't naturally have that. So when you came into my world, it really redefined how I worked out, because I worked out as hard as I could with Miles. It was always in the kind of bodybuilding, muscle growth. The diet was for the fat loss, which diet is the fat loss. You brought back a degree of intensity that may not, for getting that nice physique looking thing, may not be the most important thing, but that feeling of accomplishment and that growing of endurance.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
You know, I grew up and I was in fitness, and I think I was, you know, I played sports, and I think a lot of my upbringing, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm realizing a lot of my upbringing was probably spent around other athletes doing workouts or playing sports. And I think we get grouped at a young age into these categories. My question for you is, did you feel when you were younger that you wanted to be a part of those types of groups, and felt that whatever group that you were in, did you feel grouped? And if so, did you feel like you were miscategorized?
I was never grouped. My upbringing involved a lot of issues. I was a very imaginative child, but I knew it was my imagination. My mother, who was a very caring, wonderful, very supportive person, part of the reason that, as you know, my attitude is very much, if I can't do something, I can figure it out. I don't seem to be afraid of anything. I'll try anything. That's because my mom was very much, I could be whatever I wanted, but I was very protected. And I was also very bullied. And it didn't help that I was a very chubby child that became a very fat child. So I didn't have a peer group. Even now, I don't fit anywhere. Not fully. I'm always sort of an island of my own. And that's also part of the reason why I have difficulty making acquaintances. There's always either a situational thing, like for us, it's this working out. I feel very bonded to our working out. I connect in that way, but I don't have a lot of casual things. So as a child, I was never part of any of those groups. I was really smart, but a little bit weird, but I didn't fit with those kids either.
Mm-hmm.
When I wanted to get involved in something physical, I'd been at a camp and they had brought in Krav Maga.
Mm-hmm.
And at camp, it was a lot of fun. So my mom took me to take classes, but I was really heavy. I mean, I think around this time I was over 220 or 230. I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to the actual dojo, instead of the person who ran the dojo taking into consideration that I'm a really, really heavy kid, he had me do hundreds of jumping jacks. I was crippled for months. So that killed any attempt or desire on my part to be part of any kind of team or martial arts, which is something I really wanted to do. Even now, that's part of the whole thing with the boxing. It's innate in me to want to do these things. I just never really did them. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's what I'm sort of identifying in you, is if I can separate your mind and your body.
That would make my body very happy for a while, sure.
Your mind, your drive mentally is very high. Sometimes you push your body beyond what your body's able to do, but your mind wants to be in that group. It wants to chase that guy, in this case, me, as much as your body struggles. I mean, every time we do ab workouts, you cramp, but you always push yourself to that point. And then your body seems to get the picture whenever your mind senses there's this group mentality of accountability. But without the group mentality, without somebody to chase or somebody to hold you accountable or somebody to enjoy these things with, it seems like your mind stops being the leader and doesn't have your body to take a direction from it.
I remember once asking Eric, hey, Eric, all these people in the gym, how many of them without the gym can do what they're doing? And his answer was very few. It's like mostly they need some form of motivation. And I didn't think I was that way, but clearly the pandemic has taught me otherwise. I've restarted my fitness journey after having set it back, but that started with a phone call from Eric. And then I began doing the podcast and you reached out to me with a very nice, like, hey, I see that you're doing this thing. That's great. In both cases, it was the reach out that made me come back out of whatever shell I had retreated into to be, hey, yeah, things are terrible. I'm not sure what I'm doing. Help. It required the reach out. Otherwise, I just felt too ashamed and embarrassed. Because for a while in the pandemic, I was doing okay. I mean, once the gym went away, my workout cratered. I still was doing some, but not nearly at the pace, because prior to the pandemic really kicking in and everything shutting down, I was going 5 to 6 days a week, and at least half of that was just me and you going. By a certain point, it might have been more than that, because we just really fell into this groove, and we were just kind of motoring along hardcore.
Yeah.
I thought that was now my new normal. Just like I thought the diet was my new normal. I thought everything was my new normal. And then when it all shut down and then things got bad, especially with this year, it all collapsed. So the lessons in that were sad and severe, but very specifically, the retreating into myself again. You've talked about me being extroverted or whatnot, but I don't know if you really know this, or maybe you've heard it, but don't believe it, because my girlfriend Liz doesn't believe this. She thinks this is a story that I tell to make my extrovertedness seem like more extraordinary, but I was cripplingly shy. At 2021, I had my small, very small circle of friends, but if there was a cute girl to talk to, there was no chance in hell. If I was in a room full of people, I couldn't talk. I would try to make myself seem as small and out of the way as possible. This extrovertedness is a learned behavior, because it was learn how to talk to people, learn how not to be shy, or be alone, not have any friends, not have any social interaction. So over the course of the pandemic, I retreated back into that. And then, of course, specifically with you, as I gained more weight, the less I wanted you to see me. because you're the guy I worked the hardest with and the hardest around. And you're also the person who really got to know my rhythms and got invested in what I was doing. Just very much like I was invested in you pushing yourself as far as possible. You were invested, you know, very much like we're going to establish your floor. You would try to troubleshoot my slips as they were happening, which granted they were small slips at the time. So now that there was a big one, how the hell do I face you? How do I talk to you? I mean, like, if there's somebody who knew nuanced where I was at, it was you. Now, how do I tell you, hey, I gained 50 pounds. I can't do push-ups anymore. How do I tell you that? How do I talk to you about that?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. And not that I ever thought that you'd be like...
judgmental. Yeah.
Yeah. I had no doubt in the logical part of my mind that your reaction was only going to be, oh man, I'm sorry about that. How do we handle tomorrow? What do we need to do?
Yes.
What do you need from me?
So it was more about you than it was about me.
It was 100% about the feeling in my heart, the voices in my head. And again, logically, I knew exactly how you would react and how we would continue. I knew it. But from the emotional standpoint, it was the fear of disappointing you.
It's such a relatable thing. I mean, we all have that with our own battles. Yours just being much more visual. Well, there are other visual battles, but everyone has a standard that whether or not it's legitimate is debatable. A lot of times society will put these things in place, and we feel like we need to be a certain weight, look a certain way, or earn a certain amount of money. And if we don't have that, we're ashamed to present ourselves to another person. Even if it's somebody who loves us unconditionally, we feel ashamed. And it's because we think they deserve a better version of us. So, okay, I have a couple questions for you, as you just spoke really well, and there's a lot of stuff in there. You mentioned the extrovert being, the extrovertedness being maybe a cover.
Not a cover, a learned behavior.
A learned behavior, that's better. Do you think that extrovertedness comes forward much stronger when you're heavier? When you feel less confident in your body?
Well, first, I want to say that I appreciate your profession of unconditional love for me. Mm-hmm. That touched me.
In other words, when you were...
I think it requires... The one thing about me is, if you take away the issues of the weight, I particularly like who I am, how I present myself, and just the way I can make people feel at ease and feel comfortable. I pretty much can make almost anybody feel as if they were my lifelong friend within several sentences of talking to them. Yeah. Just by the nature of how I am. And I think I do that regardless to my weight. With being heavy, I do have to make the choice to do it, where I'm more on autopilot the more comfortable I feel in my body. Does that answer the question?
To me, I noticed that you got much more, and this is natural, you got much more engaged, much more extroverted the more we got into these workouts. And that makes sense. You were much more excited about seeing physical progress, encouraged by other people's encouragement of you, motivated. And yet when you were talking about being 20, 21, 22 and needing to have something, and you weren't doing these workouts, you needing to push out that extrovertedness to balance out your feeling of loneliness. So it seems like it kind of works both ways. Your need to be extroverted maybe is a defense mechanism and also something that runs alongside you when you're going in a good direction and maybe healing some of those wounds.
Ultimately, no matter what state my body gets into, and I've really come to realize this certainly over the pandemic, always at the back of my mind, I'm going to always be the same 11-year-old who weighed 280 pounds. And because of that, my self-esteem, everything is tied into that perception, it becomes easier to deal with the further away from that weight I get. But I think it's always going to be present. So the extrovertedness isn't so much trying to shield me from that. It's trying to push against it.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Kat, she struggled with her weight when she was younger. And she told me that if you grew up a fat kid, you always feel like a fat kid. That's what you told me.
You always are. Yeah, it's always there. And disproportionately, your self-esteem is tied into your weight, your physicality. It's like, I'm almost bordering, even if it's comedically, on a degree of arrogance with what I feel about my positive qualities, my personality, my intelligence, my ability to figure stuff out. I'm not lacking for self-esteem in these areas. And yet, they don't even figure into my how I view myself. It's almost 100% whether I'm heavy or light. As I get lighter, I start seeing myself as being attractive. As I get heavier, I see myself as a heavy, hideous beast, even though I logically know that this is not the case. I'm not going to say that I am within the realm of Adam Levine. Clearly not, no matter what my fitness gets. But I'm a decent-looking person. I know this. My dating success helped illustrate this for me, because when I was doing online dating before I met Liz, I was reasonably successful. Part of that was I could be humorous and engaging. But also part of it was my face wasn't a barrier to entry, so thank God for that. But still, 100% self-esteem tied directly into the weight, which is even right now, my self-esteem is at a 5-year low.
So let's talk about that, okay? The listeners should know, people should know, that when we work out together, the times that I see you at the gym, you work out just as hard, if not harder than me, than I do, and certainly harder than most of the people at that gym. You have a great work ethic. Whenever I suggest that we do more of something, you're always down to do more of something. You do it in your way, you complain and all these things, but you do it, it's your way of getting through the workout, but you always do the workout. Unless you physically get injured, which I don't even think is, you know, you cramp sometimes or something like that. But aside from those things,
it's just the abs. The ab, for whatever reason, and maybe it's because I've exercised other things throughout my life, but the abs just are very, very sensitive, and they take the longest to come along for me.
Uh-huh.
And also, when I'm chasing you, it's not exactly as if you're doing 10 sit-ups and, hey, we're done. Even when I'm scaled back to keep it reasonable for me, it's still 50 mini crunches. It's not 10.
Right,
mini
right,
crunches.
Right. Yeah, no, you do the workload every time and make me, as the person being chased, have to work hard to set the right pace. I mean, this is not a walk in the park for me either when we work out, because I know that you're going to be on my heels, and I know that I need to set a good example. And in the same ways that accountability works for you, it works for me. It's a two-way street in fitness, even if we're starting from a different place on that journey. So,
and I'm glad to know that. I'm glad to know that you get something.
I definitely get something out of it.
Equally valuable out of it.
Yeah,
because you know there are occasionally where it's more so now than back then, because we were much closer within our gap than now.
Yeah.
Where I was kind of like, I hope, like, I really appreciate, like, cause it does mean a lot to work out with you. It have the most fun, have the most intense workouts, and it's easy to get through, as terrible and as impossible it is to get through them. They're also easy to get through because it's just a friggin' blast.
That's awesome.
But there's a part of me that was like, I really hope that I'm providing value to Scott. You know, it's great that you're on my team, but I'm hoping that this sounds dumb. It's great that you're on my team, but I hope that I'm also on your team.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Sure. And maybe I should have said this at the beginning, but like, I don't consider myself to have elite physical fitness. I mean, the way that you're presenting me is like, I'm this super athlete or super fit person. And I have my own challenges physically that I'm trying to get towards.
Well, what are they?
I don't know. I've always felt like there's this tier of either athletes or this physical tier that I am not a part of, and I feel like I am at the bottom of a higher tier or the top of a middle tier in terms of fitness. And so I'm always trying to crack into this other area above me that I can see. And so I feel like in my world of doing CrossFit or boxing with a lot of people who are better than I am, that I'm the one chasing. And so what I gain out of our workouts is I have to be an example for you. Maybe I'm putting that on myself, but the dynamic we've created is that you instill that in me, and that gives me confidence that I am somebody worth chasing. I am somebody worth emulating. And that creates new intention in my workout, because I feel more confident in my own movements, in my own workouts, because somebody considers them worth following. So that role reversal is very valuable for me. There is somebody behind you who would look up to what you're doing. And that's the beauty of fitness, because it doesn't matter if I shave a minute off my mile time, for example. There will be somebody out there. There's more weight, there's more time that you can add on or cut off, and you can always make your workout harder. If I shave off a minute on my mile time, it doesn't make that mile any easier to run. It's still just as hard, and I can still shave off more time. There's always more to gain, and there's always somebody in front of you. Our lives are geared towards looking in front of us and seeing the next person who's better than we are. And it's nice to have somebody pushing you from behind every now and again, instead of somebody that you're trying to reach for. And that might actually propel me forward more than chasing somebody myself.
That's good to know.
I just wanted to establish the fact that when we're in the gym, you're working hard.
Thank you.
But in the times that I've known you, you have fluctuated significantly in your weight.
So that journey started at 270 pounds, give or take.
By the end of our first phase of exercising, I guess it was pre to early pandemic, you had gotten yourself down to one something.
Probably just cleared 180.
Yeah, 180.
The goal for me really is... there's not a weight goal. Weight is a relative metric. So it doesn't really...
Right.
You can tell that you're doing something when there's disparities in different weigh-ins, but ultimately I don't care about what the scale says.
Yeah.
What I care about is what I look like. And the goal was to get rid of the love handles. For once in my life, to not have love handles. I don't think I'll ever have abs. You know, we were talking to Eric yesterday and he was talking about his physique. And his physique being somewhat unnatural because his body wants to rest around 190 and be really fit, but he's now ballooned up muscular-wise to about 240, but he's got to maintain that because his body doesn't want that. I don't think without an extreme measure I will ever have abs, because I don't think my body type wants abs. But I think I could at least see where the abs live, have the general picture that around here, maybe, just maybe, you could see abs living under the nice little layer of fat that would just keep them warm at night. I want that. That's the goal. And also it'd be nice to have like some chest muscles that look like chest muscles.
You were pretty much there if you weren't already there, and we're headed back there. And I think you know that. But my question is, what's it like to fluctuate like that when your motivation to me is not in question at all? It's not for laziness that these things go up and down. It's, you know, your work ethic is there. Your commitment is there. Your intensity is there. I'm someone who's lived within 10 pounds of my current weight roughly since I was 16. So I'm a pretty consistent person through and through, for better or for worse. That means that my floor is pretty solid, but that also means that my ceiling is pretty solid. So maybe it prevents me from hitting some lows, but there are times where I feel like I could maybe bust through to another gear where maybe I don't, because I'm just so used to a methodical approach to living. So what's that like to fluctuate? What's it like to leave that area in between, that sort of routine-based living, to say, I'm going to just jack up the treadmill speed and live up here for a while and start melting off the weight, and then simultaneously be down here, and then and live in that space outside of one or two standard deviations outside of the norm for you?
Interesting question. So for a majority of my life, my fluctuation was never 10 pounds, but I did have about a 30 pound fluctuation. For most of it, it was somewhere between 190 and 220. So I would sort of just fluctuate between those for the vast majority. It was only 5-6 years ago that the weight explosion happened. And at that time I went from 190 to 270, and that was over misery from a job. So it was a lot of comfort eating. Now, also I wasn't hardcore working out like that. I've gone through periods of my life where working out became very important to me. There was a time when I was deep in the CrossFit. I was going to Valley CrossFit, and I got probably what was the best endurance shape of my life, where I could knock out two CrossFit workouts in a day and still come back the next day. But then I lost that. Then I went to my buddy Randy's CrossFit gym, Randy, who hosted on here for a little bit, and we'll be back. Actually, I want to bring him back on to specifically go in depth about CrossFit. And I was there for a while, got into decent shape there, and then the Eric thing. But during all of that, the weight never got higher than 220. It never really got below 185, but really 190. This time around, I had gotten a job that I truly, truly hated. And I keep joking about being a professional comfort eater. But really, when my defenses go, that's where my comfort goes to. It's eating. And I have to actively think against that, because it's so automatic. It is so easy to slip into. I think a lot of people are like that, but I am really like that. When this job that truly was just sucking the life out of me, there was no happiness, no joy because of this job, it became a lot of eating, and I truly exploded. Then the pandemic hit, and for most of the pandemic, before the start of this year, I gained 15 pounds, which is bad. Don't get me wrong, you don't want to gain 15 pounds, but we're talking about a human reasonable amount of weight. When my allergies got really bad and I was broken out in hives and my skin was crawling 24/7, that's where it went away this time. That's what happened the beginning of this year. And for like 7 months or so, 7-8 months, that's where the weight gain happened. I just lost all control because, well, do you have allergies? Have you ever gotten rashes?
I have asthma, allergies, yeah.
Another thing we can bond over, asthma. Think about chicken pox. You've had chicken pox.
Yeah.
Imagine living with that for 9 months.
Yeah, it doesn't sound fun.
I lost all ability to have any control because so much of it was just spent on me not ripping my skin off my body. And I don't want to make an excuse out of it, but any degree of self-control that I had eroded away. And that's where it came from.
So where was this chicken pox-like allergy when you were working out? How were you able to manage that, keep that at bay?
It didn't happen. It didn't happen.
So do you think it's related to your inactivity, to your lack of exercise, that's flared up again?
No, 3 times in my life this has happened to me.
So that's just bad timing.
Yeah, the first time it happened, we thought it was scented trash bags, and I was like 15, 16 years old, and it was horrific. My lips swelled, my eyes would swell shut. Once or twice, it was almost like my tongue began swelling, which was really frightening. The allergists couldn't help me. I was put on prednisone, which is why I have a major fear and psychological hang-up about prednisone and a lot of really hardcore steroids. because the prednisone helped because it shut down my immune system, which an allergic reaction is just your immune system overreacting to things that shouldn't be worried about in a nutshell. I gained weight at the time. My bones ached. If I moved my arm, you could hear it crackling. It just was like really bad. And I felt terrible all the time. It lasted for 6 months back then, and then it went away. We think it was sent in trash bags back then, but we don't know. Just it went away and then it was gone until 12, 13 years later when it just came back. It just suddenly it was back. Mm. Same deal, lips swollen. I actually managed to OD on Benadryl. Then it went away again after 5 months. I don't know why it did. This time around, it resurfaced. And this time around, it seems connected to dairy.
Mm.
And also, I think to some degree, wheat, because if I have something like a pizza, it's really bad. But when I'm doing keto and I might have some dairy, it's not so bad. It doesn't, I might have like a couple hives, but it's not terrible. And you'd think, well, just avoid dairy. But one, that doesn't completely take it away. And two, when you're restricting so much, sometimes you just need something.
Isn't that worse it's almost worse when it goes away and you don't know the source than it is. It's like, doesn't feel like a victory, does it?
No, it never is. It just was so horrifying. And there also was that, not only were the hives back and my skin was constantly crawling, it's this thing that has resurfaced from the past. It's like the monster coming out of the darkened woods that you've thought you've escaped and now they're there. There was that aspect of the emotional.
I totally understand that.
Trauma? Emotional.
Yeah, it puts you back into this place that you had spent a fair amount of time getting yourself out of. You think you're past it, then it returns, and with it comes all these mindsets, and it distracts, you kind of take your eye off the ball of the things that you were doing, and I use the baseball analogy because I played a lot of times when you... A one-run inning can quickly turn into a 6-7-run inning if you're not careful, because these things snowball, and the next thing you know, it's like you can't stop the bleeding.
It's all in the mindset. It really is, because you can do amazing things. You can weather lots of really horrible storms as long as your mind is in the right place. But the moment your mind breaks, and that's what it was, because the hives began in November.
Yeah.
By January, my emotional reserves had run out. And then it just became, well, screw this. I'm just going to eat whatever makes me feel good. I don't even know if there was even that thought. It just the dam broke and it went away.
It's such a tricky thing, because with fitness, you don't see all the time immediate returns. Like if you do a workout, you don't look better after the workout. I mean, maybe your muscles are swole up and you feel a certain way, but there's not that physical immediate feedback so that you could do one workout and realize, oh, great, I'm starting to chip back away at this thing. So the feeling of getting back into fitness at this point probably felt like, my God, it took me, I don't know, 18 months with a pretty consistent schedule to get where I was at before. I can't take on an 18-month commitment right now.
There is that. However, I will say this. I did this before. I did this. I succeeded. I did it well. I did it in a reasonable amount of time, and I did it without doing really stupid things. We could argue about whether the extended fast where I worked out 9 days out of the 14.
You did it naturally, is what you're saying.
Yes. Because we know people that there's always a plastic surgery. They're vacuuming themselves out. They're taking all these different hormones and all these different chemicals.
Yeah.
And they're currently in good shape. God knows what happens after the next emotional collapse for them. God knows what happens after they stop taking whatever stuff it is. And this is not a cheap path to go down. I didn't do anything more extreme than I'm going to do a fast. That was my most extreme thing.
Right.
I did intermittent fasting. I worked out hard. I did keto. Nothing that required anything more than anybody could do if they set their mind to it. So I have the knowledge that all the steps are there, and I've taken all of these steps before. I can do it again as long as I can focus on it.
Yeah.
So there's the psychological, oh God, it's so many steps in front of me. But then there's also the fact that I've taken every single one of them before. So I think it might be a little bit of a wash.
You know, for me, I give a lot of credit to my parents, who are both fit and instilled in me this need to exercise that's kind of a part of my DNA. I have never encountered anything like what you are describing, this allergic reaction, especially the one that resurfaces over the course of time in your life. But I, like all of us, have our own hardships, things that eat into our time and our energy. One of the things that I've learned is that even if I don't have the ability to do a workout to the extent that I know I can, like when we do workouts, like yesterday we worked out for maybe 90 minutes, 90 plus minutes.
It was a light day for us.
I don't have 90 minutes every day. I don't have 45 minutes. So, but I've found that if I have 10 minutes and a clock, I can put a timer on and I can do as many X's, whatever that X is, in 10 minutes as I can, build a small circuit for myself and just do a quick high intensity workout. My body checks that box of getting a workout in. My mind tells my body that we have accomplished that task of the day. And it could be an 8-minute workout or it could be an 80-minute workout. We still feel like we accomplished that for the day. So that's been my thing that I've used, knowing that not every workout is going to leapfrog you forward. But if you imagine a calendar where every day you draw an X on it, if you accomplish that thing, I want to be somebody that's got a string of X's. I don't want to break that chain. When you're going good and you know that feeling, you have that string of X's. And I think that works conversely too, where after a long enough time, you see a lot of blank squares on the calendar. And the thought of drawing all those X's again, I think, feels pretty daunting.
First off, I love the idea of, I only have 10 minutes. Well, I can certainly do, you know, a round of 3 exercises, X amount each, and just count it down to the 10. For people who are heavy, believe it or not, the exercise they most should be doing is simply walking.
Yep.
Most of what we do is not for weight loss. Our workouts don't contribute too much to the entire weight loss journey. That's mostly going to happen in the kitchen. But also, it's mostly going to happen through, you know, slow and steady things such as walking.
Yeah.
Still, within the context of the workouts, they're still very helpful, and there's a lot of benefits to them. But holding yourself to, this week I am going to do 5 workouts, get them in however I can get them in, whatever they are, as you do more and more of that, it can be very psychologically beneficial. The thing that I'm up against is, ultimately, I'm chasing the ghost of what I could do.
Yeah.
Our last workout prior to this were 7 exercises, 7 reps, 7 rounds. And exercise 2 was pull-ups. And you would crank out 7 pull-ups 7 times, where I would do jumping pull-ups. It's the sort of thing that makes you feel like, am I really getting something out of this? You are, but it's so much easier than doing pull-ups. But in the back of my mind, as I was doing those jumping pull-ups, it was, you know, a year ago you could do these.
Yeah.
And now you can't.
So that's more more discouraging than it is motivating for you?
It can be, if I allow it. Because also, the one thing I would really encourage people to try to develop is knowing when you're hearing that voice, that it's a bullshit voice. That it's noise. That it's a barrier. That listening to it doesn't benefit you anything. Is it true? Doesn't matter. Because you can opt to not listen to it. Even if it's true, yes, a year ago, I could do 7 pull-ups. They would probably be jumping sometime around round 4 or 5. I wasn't quite that good, but I certainly, for the first couple sets, would have gotten 7 pull-ups before I would have needed to modify a bit, at which point I would have. Now they're all jumping. But it doesn't matter, because If I listen to the voice and if I get discouraged and I stop, there are no 7 pull-ups. If I turn that voice off and I just stick with what I'm doing, there will be 7 pull-ups. You can move forward. It doesn't matter that you don't have them today. You can get them eventually as long as you work at it.
Yeah, there is such strength in falling apart and building yourself back up again. It's a strength that I don't, as a consistent person who's stayed pretty fit over the course of my life, I don't know what that feels like. I have seen in people who, and it's not just in fitness, who have fallen, who pick themselves back up, they come back to a place where they maybe were before, but they're stronger than even if they're standing, even if let's say in this example, let's say you do those 7 pull-ups like you did a year or so ago. You're stronger now because you have gotten yourself back there mentally. You're way tougher. And if you were to have fallen again and then worked your way back to getting those 7 pull-ups again, you're going to be stronger than you were the last time. So all of that is just a benefit because you're going to get back there. And now you're going to have had the journey of getting back there. That's something that makes you stronger than even I am, who's repping out those 7 consistently during that whole time that you're building yourself back.
We do a lot of joking about, like, you know, working to success. Success is failure. We fail all the time. And we do. We tend to push ourselves in a lot of ways. And in one form or another, it goes to the point where something didn't go the way you wanted that last rep to go. In a lot of ways, it's a mini training to teach you how to keep plugging away.
Yeah.
It's all about the ability to handle failure is one of the greatest skills you can have. The ability to not see failure as an absolute, because most failures aren't absolute. Most failures contain the seeds of various successes, if applied in a different way or the next go around. Knowing how to weather the, well, that didn't quite go to plan. Okay, what's next? Being able to do that is just such a great, valuable skill. And more than anything, that's what I try to apply.
The ability to reframe perceived failure as success and also motivation for the next time is what's going to keep you buoyant and motivated to keep moving forward. Because we can dwell on the things that we didn't do, but you're not accounting for the 90 minutes of good work that you put in before that happened, that you can go home, take to the bank, and then build on.
And this is what I mean by, at the end of every podcast, I say, hold yourself accountable, but do it with kindness and understanding. And this is what I'm talking about. I don't mean just be like, today was nothing but eating our way through pizzas. I forgive myself for that. That's not what I mean. It's not using that to excuse poor judgment. What it is that understand that occasionally you're going to slip, you make a mistake. Dwelling on the mistake is not valuable. What's valuable is acknowledging the mistake, acknowledging the slip up, acknowledging the failure, understanding how and why you made that failure, and then moving on from it. Not just being like, oh, that happened.
Yeah.
It is the way of reframing and allowing yourself to move forward.
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm thankful to you for considering what I do to be valuable to you. It's incredibly motivating to me and helps me uphold a standard for myself that I think is chaseable. I mentioned that earlier. I think what you're doing on this podcast and the openness and vulnerability with which you approach this subject that a lot of people struggle with is admirable. And I know that a lot of people out there will really benefit from hearing this. And I know that a lot of what you talk about is maybe geared towards people who really struggle with their weight and their fitness journey. But I know, as somebody who has had less of a struggle with it, you know, in this aspect of my life, it comes a little easier. There's tremendous benefit to people like me as well. So it's a very universal concept and applies to things even with outside of fitness. Everyone has their own fitness, their whatever that may be, their own mountain to climb. This is really about how to break down seemingly tall mountains into little achievable daily checkpoints and encouraging yourself along the way, giving yourself the benefit of the doubt if you slip a little bit, and knowing that you can get yourself back.
And more than anything, I hope that somewhere out there, there's somebody, even if it's not about their weight, their mountain to climb is a work situation. Again, it all just comes back to mindset. And I hope in some small way that this podcast, these conversations serve as inspiration, serve as an understanding that they're not alone, they're not weird, they're not whining, they're not having an issue that isn't real, and that they can help, that helps them to grow and recover from that. And thank you for coming on. As I've said, I keep mentioning you on the podcast because you are central, very central to this journey that I'm on. And I do appreciate and enjoy the time we spend torturing the crap out of each other. It's a high point of my week. It helps keep me on track. And like, I know that you're not, like, see you as the super athlete. You're very good at what you do, and it provides the inspiration. So it's great that it's this mutual thing. And hopefully there are people in the gym who see us running around, like running this massive rat race, and see that and are equally as inspired. Speaking of things that you're good at, I want to embarrass you a little bit. Scott mentioned that he's a singer, and Scott is, in my opinion, and he's in a realm of music that isn't my wheelhouse, but he is exceptionally good. He has one of the most beautiful falsettos that you'll hear on another human being.
Thank you.
And I want to give him an opportunity to tell you a little bit about it. So Scott, who the hell are you?
So I'm a singer and guitarist and songwriter in a band called the Shadow Boxers. We have taken some hits, like everybody in our industry, or a lot of people in our industry, during the pandemic, as we had an album release that got postponed and tours surrounding that release that got canceled. And we've been kind of dealing with personal lives and things like that surrounding all of that. And in the meantime, I have recorded a solo record under my full name, Scott Tyler Schwartz. I'm releasing my first single off of this project called Guinea Pig, which is kind of an apt name for my first ever attempt in this world by myself, on December 7th. So I'm going to be starting releasing some of my solo work. I find myself thinking about what you're saying about this, you know, breaking down this journey and stumbling, and the humanity within it, and the motivation, and the hope to hold yourself accountable with compassion. I found, you're, you know, we're talking about applying this to something other than fitness. Well, I know that that's true in my journey of recording this album. I'm in a band. We self-produced our last album called The Slow March of Time Flies By, which is available everywhere.
We're going to put a link in the show description.
So a touch about our history. I'm in a band with guys I met in college. Just out of college, we toured with the Indigo Girls. We were their opening band. Then we came back on and were their backing band. We did two tours with them. And then we linked up with Justin Timberlake, who saw a video of ours online. And that kind of began a five-year relationship with him, where he was serving as our mentor. We were sending him songs we were writing. He was giving us advice. We eventually got into the studio with him, recorded an EP with him called Apollo, which, of course, is not on the Indigo Girls side of our sound. We're a three-part harmony band, so with influences ranging from Crosby, Stills, and Nash to more of the JT, Michael Jackson pop side of things. You know, spent a lot of years trying to find that identity. I've spent a lot of years in rooms with other people who do all of the producing, and I have been limited to being a singer, being a songwriter, and letting other people handle all of the producing. During this pandemic, I mean, when I tell you that I couldn't even really record my own voice in a guitar, I didn't know how to do it. I'm not a particularly tech-savvy person. I looked at the software that you use to record yourself? You know, is everyone's getting home studios and doing that kind of thing? I saw that as just this impossible. I've been with people who are great at it. I know what it looks like to be great at Logic or Pro Tools or whatever you use. And it's like learning a language. It just felt insurmountable to me. All of the things that you have applied in your life to trying to climb this mountain of fitness, I kind of felt was my own journey towards accomplishing this goal of trying to record myself. And I found myself just chipping away, getting just basic recordings of my guitar and my voice, and then thinking, well, I mean, I know what the bass would do. I guess I can do the bass. I'll add bass to this and I'll find a sound that's close enough. And I added the bass, and then I said, well, and then, you know, of course the piano would do this. And of course the drums would do this. And the next thing I know, I have songs that sound like that I produced. I built the world, and I had friends along the way that helped me. Like I have been for you, motivated me, who are better than I am, who push me to learn more things about how to record myself. I had told myself this story about myself that I wasn't good at this. You know, I'm now about a week away from releasing, or whenever this podcast comes out. I don't know when it'll be, but
probably be a week after.
Okay, so right around December 7th, when this song comes out, as I'm releasing my first song, and I've got, you know, an album's worth behind it, 12 to 15. I don't know what I'm going to end up putting on it. But songs I'm really proud of that are actually my identity musically, which I haven't really been able to find, because as I mentioned, there's a lot of styles that we were able to do and me within that. So,
and this is also just your voice.
It's just mine. I'm not in a band anymore. I don't have to compromise. I'm just this is my expression. That's hard to define. Again, another massive question that you have to start answering with small steps. Okay, let's just start with a voice and a guitar, and let's just build it, and let's just build it a little bit more. And the next thing I know, I've got these full-fledged productions, and my identity is within them. And I found that the closer I am to every part of the process, the more it feels like me. And the more I turn it over to somebody else, the less it feels like me. So it's been a huge lesson that I gained this pandemic. Like I say, I know I'm repeating myself, but the fitness thing, maybe that comes slightly easier to me. But this recording process was not easy for me. People out there, if it's fitness or if it isn't, there are those things that you've told yourself a story about yourself. And you've told yourself that you're not good at something. Whether or not that's your fault for that story is up for debate. But this is the reality that you're given. Things may seem a certain way, but they aren't that way. And you can chip away at it.
There's always another opportunity for you to redefine yourself and for you to write the story that is yours.
Yeah, well put. So I'm incredibly proud of the album I've made.
Well, clearly, the day it's released, I'll be buying my copy.
Thank you.
So, Scott, where can people find you when they are not finding you here?
Well, I'm on social media. On my Instagram is Scott Tyler Schwartz. That will be... I don't have a Spotify page yet, but when this song Guinea Pig is released, I will create a new page. It will be literally the only song on that page.
We'll also put that link in the show description.
And in the meantime, you can check out The Shadow Boxers, which has been the bucket that I have put my creativity into for the past 12 years and still is. I'm just creating a new one for myself, which is, I think, part of the diversification of being in this time where so many outlets are available to us in 2022 nearly. So, I would say follow me personally, Scott Tyler Schwartz, and then also the Shadow Boxers, and lots of good stuff in the pipeline in both of those arenas.
And again, I can't stress how talented a singer and songwriter Scott is. And as for me, I am the fittest fat kid you know. Right now, you're finding me directly in your ear canal. But on the socials, you can find me at Instagram at Fittest Fat Kid, Twitter at Fittest Fat Kid, TikTok at Fittest Fat Kid. The Facebook page is at Fittest Fat Kid. If you have a story you want to share with us, if you have a question, if there's just something you need to get off your chest and you have nobody to tell it to, you can tell it to us. And that email address is hi there@fittestfatkid.com. It still, as of this recording, doesn't exist in any way, shape, or form, but at some point, hopefully, maybe, possibly by the time this thing gets released, the website will be www.fittestfatkid.com. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe, leave a comment or a star, whatever your particular podcast location, whatever it allows you to do, please do that. We'd appreciate it. So, no matter who you are, no matter where you are or what you're doing, hold yourself accountable, but do it with kindness and understanding. And I'll see you next week. But before we go, here is a sample of Scott's new single, Guinea Pig.
I was your guinea pig. You were my only love. You had to test it out, drive it around. I was your dress rehearsal. You were my final bow. Oh, what a different view to watch from the crowd. I guess you worked out the kinks on me. Your guinea pig.